The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to the Promised Land, a show about Manchester United and part of the 90 Min Podcast Network. I'm Scott, joined by Rob Blanchett. As per usual, we're mid-international break, but we're going to talk about Manchester United and their new ownership today. Taking stock after a few months or a few weeks of this being confirmed. So Jim Ratcliffe making some appearances, doing some words, saying things. Already said more than the Glazer family have ever said in their 20 years. 10 times more, probably. Rob, we're back. How's it going?
Yeah, good. It's going interesting today, isn't it? Talk about Sir Jim Ratcliffe and Ineos and all of that a little bit more laterally, because we've done a lot of, obviously, content over the weeks and months, haven't we, over this, like we've been forced to when it's come to about who's going to buy what, which entities are interested in Manchester United, why do they want to buy into Man United? Like you just said there, Scott, I think what's really interesting about Sir Jim Ratcliffe, and we'll break a lot of it down today, is just how much he's actually saying and how much out there he's willing to put about his idea about Manchester United, because he's going to have to put his money where his mouth is, Scott. So the more he actually says, the more we can hold him to account. So today's show is going to be a little bit about that, about what have we heard so far and kind of where are we going?
Yeah, he did last week do an appearance with a Geraint Thomas on a cycling podcast, but obviously he has lots of relationships in the cycling community, yeah, given his previous work, and obviously pretty comfortable sharing things, especially about his new venture with United, on shows like that. There's some of his comments we'll pick up on today. We'll pick up parts of that interview, but just take stock in general, because it was always Ineos versus Qatar. Ineos won, Qatar did not. And I know that was a divisive moment for United and the fans at the time. But it seems finally we're approaching a period now, especially because United won their last game, where things have settled down a little bit. But obviously there are big questions about what happens beyond the end of this season into next season and even beyond that, because it feels like for the first time, fundamental change might be coming. A new stadium could be on the horizon. Squad mismanagement days could be over, you know? So people who know what they're doing are coming in. Omar Berada's coming in. He's already been confirmed. As we record, we're still waiting for Dan Ashworth to be confirmed and a start date for him to be confirmed. But so Jim sits at the top, and yeah, we'll talk about what good he's done so far, but also we also want to hear from you. Like, let us know in the comment section of the show, like, what has Ratcliffe and the way that he set things out, does it excite you? Do you accept it? How do you feel about Gareth Southgate? Because we'll talk about that as well. And obviously he said some stuff about Erik ten Hag, which I know I'm pro keeping ten Hag. I still am. You know, I've said this for a while. I feel like something would have to go absolutely disastrously wrong. I feel like there are reasons to stick with him. But obviously, it doesn't stop speculation happening. I know not everyone feels the same about Ten Hag and want to change. But to me, I feel like some things he said suggest that I think they're ready to back him. So I feel that we'll talk about that a little bit later in the show. But subscribe to it wherever you get your podcasts, Apple and Spotify. Watch us on YouTube, The Promised Land, United Podcast, Man United Podcast. Like the video, subscribe, leave a comment, etc., etc. Notification bell as well. Please hit that so you never miss a show. Leave us a 5-star review on an audio platform if you listen to us there as well. And get us on social at @_ScottSaunders, @_Rob_B, and @TPLMUFC on X. Right. Where should we start, Rob? Is there anything specifically about Jim and his public appearances, things that he's said, things that he's done so far that you want to start with? I know you're pretty pro on, well, both of us are. We're both pro on new ground, new era, 100,000 match day experience, not just the stadium, things around it, make it a day out. And United's Old Trafford, while it hosted an amazing moment when Ahmad scored in injury time of extra time against Liverpool recently, is it fit for purpose? Do United need to move on? Do they need to make a statement? I know the answer already, but, you know.
For me, a lot of this boils down to about normality. If you're Manchester United, what should be normal in the Man United universe, both for the fans, for the team, for the ownership, for everything, everything that club badge represents, what does that actually mean? For me, Scott, I think we've had this kind of 10 years plus of dysfunction, which we could talk about to a blue in the face, like we could do a Glazers out show and yeah, great. But the truth is, I don't want to really talk about any of that anymore. It's like the past. The past is there and we will dig into it as we go along. I mean, when it comes to Ineos and Jim Ratcliffe and where we are today, is that we now need to reset the boundaries. We need to say this is the standard now. And we're going to be holding Jim Ratcliffe and Ineos to account. We really are. And I want people to understand that, because there's been a lot of content creators and journalists and whatnot, presenters, kind of who've been on a side, like we said there, with Qatar, you know, Qatar in, Qatar out, Ineos in, Ineos out. And we had a preference, but that is not why we do it or how we do it. For me, it's just about making sure that Man United could be the best it can be, the best football team on a football pitch. So that's where we're going to start today, because I think it's interesting that Jim Ratcliffe, this billionaire, people are saying, oh, you know, before weeks and months ago, oh, he hasn't said a lot. Well, he's said a hell of a lot now. Like, he really has. He's come out. He's commented on literally all sorts of things that you wouldn't expect most owners to talk about. And he's almost talked about it like a fan, Scott. You know, he's been like calling out teams and saying he hates them. It's quite interesting. So we'll cover all of that today. We'll kind of have a look at what rhetoric he's been putting out there. And we'll try and dig into it, Scott, to see if we believe him or not.
He literally said, I hate them all.
Yeah.
When he was asked who he prefers to win the league, Liverpool, City or Arsenal. I hate them all. Which was interesting.
And he said it sincerely. Like, he didn't say it like pantomime. He said it like, well, I'm a United fan, I hate them all. And it's kind of how we would all say it as well.
They're all the enemy. I couldn't possibly choose one, he said.
Yeah.
But we'll do the stadium.
That will resonate with a lot of United fans. Mm. That one sentence will resonate. I get asked all the time, who do you want to win the league? I think you told me last week, and I said, oh, Arsenal. And we did that. But it's kind of like, you know, who's the lesser of...
No,
of
I want Aston Villa to win it if United don't win it.
I'd rather Man United won it, you know, like a miracle or something. But, you know, ultimately, you know, I grew up, I hated Liverpool. I don't feel any different about them just because I've worked with them or covered them or done any of that in the past. They are our rivals. They're always going to be our rivals. So I think it's good that he's actually put it like that.
Right, we'll talk about manager stuff in a bit. But I want to start with the ground, because he, on this pod, has said Man United are arguably the greatest club in the world, definitely in the top three. They are probably the biggest sports brand worldwide, a bit like Coca-Cola. It needs to have a stadium that's befitting of the club and the brand. That might have been the case 20 years ago, but it's not today. Old Trafford is a bit tired. You look at what Real Madrid are doing with the Bernabeu and Barcelona with the Camp Nou. The Bernabeu is fabulous. It's a cauldron of noise. New Camp's enormous, and they're spending a lot of money revamping it. And he goes on and on a bit. And talks about, as he's done previously, like when we talk about how he's talking, he's literally going out and repeating himself with some things that he's saying. He said that Old Trafford is a bit tired line a few times already.
Yeah,
he's talked about refurbishing the ground and that being a decent option, and it can be good, but think about how good a new ground would be. I think he's firmly in the camp of rebuild if it's possible. And he said, if we built a completely new ground, it would be state-of-the-art, world-class, have a capacity of 90 or even 100,000. I think that then provides a platform for some of the big competitions in the north of England. He's obviously wheeled out the line Wembley of the North, and that wasn't him, was it? That was an article that did that. But he goes on to say United, City and Liverpool have won 10 Champions Leagues and London have won 2. And, you know, we've heard all this before, but the 100,000 line, like biggest stadium in Europe, you know, that's a statement.
It's a statement, and I think it also shows, it's really interesting the last few months, about how Ineos are approaching this project and what they're listening to. Because there's a lot of noise out there, isn't there? And football always is, and it's quite interesting, I think, with the Glazers over time. So the Glazers just got very used to listening to the wrong section, the wrong side of some of the opinion, you know, and it's because they wanted to be Galacticos themselves. They thought that was a way to kind of build a project. I think Ratcliffe in their earliest days, and we've kind of felt this about Ineos months before the deals were ratified or anything like that, is that they were the one who were going to be the adults in the room. They were going to come to the table and say, all right, well, we want to win. We want to do everything. We need to do it properly. If we don't do it properly and slowly and methodically and correctly, most businesses don't thrive, Scott. Man United are in that sector. Now, I actually described United a while ago as the Coca-Cola. Funny enough, I'm funny you said that, as the Coca-Cola of world football, in that fact that it's the most instantaneously recognisable brand. Yeah, just straight off. You know what you're looking at, don't you, when you see it? And I think that's your pivot. That's where you start. Yeah, you start off from there and you build from that point of being the biggest team in the world. And it's quite interesting, isn't it, that he's using that now, that moniker about United are arguably the biggest club in the world, because that is very Manchester United. United want their fans to believe that, and it's true to an extent. But it doesn't matter how big you are, Scott, if you haven't got the best stadium or if you haven't got the best team and all of that. You're just another team, aren't you, trying to pretend to be something bigger than you are. So I think with Jim Ratcliffe now, he knows it's going to cost a lot of money, Scott. I think these things that he's saying, he's kind of putting it out there that, yeah, we're going to do it. We're going to do it the right way. And this is our expectation. You know, we want to be the best. So we're gonna put a project together that actually shows our intention. And he's talked loads about it, Scott. I'm really surprised of how open he's been. Because he said to journalists, I'm open to all subjects. He's actually, people have interviewed him. He's like, yeah, ask me anything. I don't care. Just tell me. You know, I'm not going to say don't ask this or that or the other. Ask me any question and I'll try and answer it as honestly as I can.
But how good is that, though, like in terms of just, you know, honesty? He doesn't come across as dishonest. He comes across like some things he says you might not agree with, but at least it's an opinion. Like, and it's a guy that, you know, what you're getting here is a guy who knows himself, knows what he wants, knows the reasons why he's doing something. He said it a number of times already. I'm not buying Man United to make money. Like, if I wanted to make more money, I'd buy another energy company. And yeah, of course. Like,
exactly.
Who buying a football club makes money?
No one. It's the worst business in the world to put money into and think that you're going to get anything back. It really is.
It really is. And, well, obviously, the only way to do it really would be to, well, the example of it is the Glazers. The way that the Glazers have done it, they bought it on leverage, you know? And now they have a football club, which they couldn't actually sell completely, but they want to achieve a $10 billion valuation. A 10 billion, is it pound or billion? Pound or dollar, I can't remember. But they would make a killing, basically, if they sold this club outright. But that's a 20-year hold. So Jim is 71, 72. He hasn't got 20 years left, you know?
No.
So this is more of a passion project for him. He wants to see United turn around. He's seen United and how they've been run terribly for God knows how long. There's a lot of costly but simple in ideation fixes to make, really. And this should have been done over the course of the last decade or so, like in stages, but obviously United have been left to rot in a sense. And now there's a ton of things that you have to do, and you have to do it pretty quickly. So it seems pretty daunting, but it's got an idea behind everything. So it's quite refreshing.
Yeah, look, and I think the best business leaders always are not scared to talk about anything. Like, you shouldn't be. Like, everything at the end of the day is dollars and cents. It's all the pounds and pennies. How do you make things work? It's a structural thing. I think with Man United, we all can openly say about the Glazers that this is the Glazers' world of secrecy over the last 10 or 15 years that they've built has been deliberate. It's been strategic. Is that we will do what we want because we own X, Y, and Z, and we don't need to talk about football matters. And what we'll do is we'll buy you a play here and there and just shut you all up and shut you down. And we've constantly asked public questions about Manchester United, their intentions, and had radio silence. Yeah, and the only time the Glazers came out of their, you know, their hole in Florida was when the European Super League was a thing, and they had to then speak because they kind of looked a bit silly there because they're one of the architects. So I think they're kind of looking for a route out of the public eye because they don't want to talk. But someone like Jim Ratcliffe, most business leaders will do what he's doing and be honest and say, yeah, this is good. This lot isn't good. This is bad. And we're going to cut this bit out. We're going to do that surgery. And again, we'll go back to Ralph Rangnick and what he's talked about at Man United in the past. You have to apply that to all facets of the business. I like to call it, you know, root and branch assessment. It's what I call it in my job. So that's how you do it. And he's doing it, Scott, in an open way. Like, we can't judge him if he's a good man or a bad man. That's not any of it. That's not what it's about. It's about, what are you going to do for Manchester United now? That's it. Nothing else. I don't care about the rest of it. I don't care that you live in Monaco. You know, that's a different conversation. I don't care about your taxation and stuff like that. So I think that's also why, Scott, the nation states are so interested in the big football clubs and just football clubs in general, because they're not buying it for profit either, you see. They're not buying these teams to kind of make money. They're doing it to kind of show a certain image, isn't it? We've talked about that a lot in the past. People could accuse Ineos of that as well, and I understand that. I think Ratcliffe's at least speaking as an individual. You know, like, we know that Ineos want a larger stake in Man United over a long period of time, and I think that will come to fruition. As far as Jim Ratcliffe goes, you know, he wants to win. He wants to build this new version of Old Trafford. He wants to build a new football team, and he wants to be the guy taking the plaudits for it. As part of it, his ego is that he wants to prove that he was the right guy for the job, that he went there, put his money in, and that Man United became better because of him. Already, Scott, he's only been in 5 minutes and not even done anything. And yet the vibe around the football club is massively different, isn't it?
I mean, I personally, and maybe there's people listening who disagree with this, but, you know, I was always in this camp. I look at the way I can appreciate the style of football Man City play, but, you know, there's stuff hanging over City. And I just feel like I struggle to connect with it, like, even to the point of disliking it. You know, like, I know Sir Jim has said, I hate them all. but for me, it's, you know, I look at the circumstances around how they've risen to becoming the highest revenue club in world football, ahead of Man United, ahead of Real Madrid. And I think, you know, I wouldn't like that for my team, you know.
No.
And City have done that, and obviously there's charges hanging over them currently, which we're waiting. It's been years that we're waiting for resolution for that on. But, you know, to me, I think, well, I look at Liverpool, and I respect the way that Liverpool have done what they've done over the past few years, and City are different. Obviously, they've swept up pretty much everything before them, but there's a bit of a numbness there for me. And obviously, some fans who are, you know, really still into it, they do have to answer questions about these charges and defend, you know, defend it, even to the point where you look a little bit silly. And I just wouldn't like to have to do that for myself, or I wouldn't like to have to be defensive of a state buying my club. You know, and I know that was something that definitely scared me, or I was maybe scared about how I would feel about it if that had happened. But with Jim, at least you've got some, yeah, it might take longer, might not happen at all, but at least you're keeping the soul. You know.
Well, football is a private sector business, first and foremost. Again, I like to look at a lot of this thing as black and white. And that really means that states should not be allowed to buy football clubs. So I would like one day that's where football goes and football puts that in place, that you don't then have, you know, governments or royal families or anything like that having any chance of owning any football club. It's not right, Scott, because it's politics, completely different to the private sector. But I think the thing is with Jim Ratcliffe is, again, is that, you know, like my personal values probably don't align up with Jim Ratcliffe. If I was sat next to him here and we were talking about our lives and our worlds and what we believe in, probably very, very different people. But you can't look at work and business like that all the time. You just cannot. And I think, like you just said there about what camp being in, for me, it was always being, what camp am I not in? That was more important to me. You know, to me, it was like, I don't want to have to sit here in years to come in my job and as my place as a Manchester United fan and defend the indefensible. I don't want to do that, you know, and this is why it was a big deal to a lot of us. It wasn't, oh, I'm Team Jim, wave a flag. Oh, I'm really into Ineos. I don't support owners like that. That's not my thing at all. I think when you look at Man City, and I'll put this on record, I've said it before, Manchester City in the future are going to lose all their titles. Yeah, they are. They are going to lose it because one day they're going to be held accountable and they're going to be brought to justice. Now, it might not happen next week or next year or whenever, but one day their shady dealings and stuff that's been going on behind the scenes, and it's all there to people can go and look at the numbers and all of that. You just said they're highest revenue club in the world. You have to ask, how have you got that revenue? Where's that revenue come from? You don't have to go very far, Scott, to find it. It really doesn't. Like, the apple does not fall far from the tree. So I think that's the whole thing with City, is that I didn't want that for United. I don't want to go, oh, yeah, we're back, you know, for 10 years, won 3 titles or won 4 titles or won a few FA Cups. Or we're back in the Champions League. Oh, we've won a Champions League. And what? Which point there where do you have to, does it stop? And do you have to then go, oh, actually, we didn't do that through the right means. We did it like that. You just said there about being bored about Man City. I still think that in terms of football, Jim Ratcliffe will be looking at it and tasking his people to be more like Man City in some elements, like very much so. But certainly in starting things, when we talk about what style of play wins titles, well, Man City are proving that their style of play wins titles. They're proving that unequivocally. How they get there is a different matter. But I do think world football looks at it like that as well. And why Man United chose Omar Berada as the guy to go head the project up as CEO? Well, because they want that kind of slice of Man City, that part of it that actually, I think, gives you the leverage to go out into the marketplace and prove that you're a player once again. You can't be Man United from 20 years ago, Scott. You can't be Sir Alex's United and go, well, that's what we are. We're hell and thunder and all of that. Well, no, you've got to have a balance somewhere. And I think that's where Man City have changed the game in many aspects of style of play and what wins you titles.
I know what I said, what I said about City and not feeling attached to it or even to the point where I support their biggest rivals, and but it doesn't, you know, I feel it feels a bit hollow to me.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, totally. they are the best run football club in the world. Like, the processes that they put in place is things that United should be looking to copy or do better or improve on. And that's why Omar Berada's coming in, because they want to take a little bit of that and then insert it into United's running processes because they don't have a structure like that. But obviously there's certain means and certain ways that they have ascended to the point that they're at, which are different. But, you know, they have...
Don't sit well.
Yeah, which don't sit well. But, like, you, in terms of the way that they do transfers, the way that they have set their academy up, the way that they have pick out some... Probably got one of the best youth academies in the world, the way that they pick players out from South America, different parts of the world. Like, that is how you should do it. And that's how United should start doing it. But, obviously... To get to that point, they've had to... No accusations.
no accusations, blah, blah, blah. I might have made a few just a minute ago, but the whole point of it is that it's more about taking the method of, like, the method works. What goes on behind the scenes at Man City is a completely different thing, and we're not trying to advocate that either way, are we? What we're saying is that, you know, when you're building a squad... How do you build it from the ground up? Where do you start? Like, does it start with a manager? And we've said in the show many times that the manager is actually not the first piece of the jigsaw. Many football fans, I think, fall for that all the time. It starts at the grassroots. It depends how your own philosophy and plan, and then kind of style, managers, players, and everything comes on top. So, yeah, United needs to take a lot of that from City, because I think City have proved that from... Maybe their first signing with Robinho, you remember all those years ago, where they went that route and they were like, well, we need to go buy big players and all this. They did do it the right way. They went into the marketplace, Scott, and found players that were less fashionable. Even in the early years, the Yaya Toure's, you know, the David Silvers, these were players that were on the market. But really, the market at the top end was a bit like, not really into it, you know, just not the style of football. And they built their style of football around those acquisitions and developed it. And that's why they won the treble last year for me. That's, you know, they were the best team. The financial stuff, I think, will come back to haunt them one day.
You say that with confidence. I don't think everyone shares the confidence that you have. I feel like that day is coming as well, but I know that not everyone does.
The reason why people don't share that confidence, and also I would also question it, is because of how corrupt football is as a sport. From the very top, we've had it with FIFA. I've been covering FIFA for 15 years of stuff they've done and all of that. But yet they are trying to sort this out. We know the big institutions are trying to find a way to make sure that club football is more accountable. So I think that's why one day it will come, because it will become a legal matter one day, Scott, somewhere down the line, and someone will say, right, okay, let's prove it that way. And I think City, so far, the rules are changing as well, aren't they? They're going to try and change the rules to make sure these football clubs have to declare stuff a lot more clearly. And that's a good thing for football. It's got to be. And I want United to declare stuff clearly. That's how I want it to be. And everyone should.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Kind of adhere to that. I think City will be the same as that. This is not a Man City podcast, but they are important in the bigger conversation.
One thing United have yet to declare clearly is the future of the manager. Mm-hmm. Erik ten Hag is always going to be a United are sixth in the league, and if you're sixth in the league and you're Man United, your position is going to be questioned. They've lost a lot of games this year. Although, like I pointed out the other day, United have, I think they've only lost two games in 2024. I want to say two.
Right, yeah.
And, you know, the noise continues. You dread to think if United had lost to Liverpool, how this international break would be looking. But hey, that doesn't stop. It doesn't stop Gareth Southgate being linked with the job, Roberto De Zerbi being linked with the job, Graham Potter being linked with the job. Tons of people. There's a long old list. If you've been listening to this podcast for any amount of time, you probably gather that I may be irrationally in support of Erik ten Hag, or have been. Although I will say that is mainly because I don't think any manager in the circumstances that United have had, I've seen managers who are very good managers come into United and get eaten up by it. And I've always said that the structural elements and the structural issues are what holds every manager back. But I think I've seen enough personally in Erik ten Hag to feel like I want him to have another year. I look at the alternatives and I think, God, man, this isn't the time. But one thing I did want to talk about here, he was talking about Arsenal, right, in this interview. And obviously he said, I hate them all. I hate Arsenal. I hate Liverpool. I hate City. But he then went on to talk about Arteta. Mikel Arteta at Arsenal, who finished eighth and fifth and won the FA Cup. But, you know, Mikel Arteta was on the brink. Some of the runs that Mikel Arteta went on before Arsenal became good, you know, were horrendous. He really was. But Jim Ratcliffe said, winning the league would be good for Arteta. It would be good for him because he's done really well and Arsenal have been patient with him. Now, that one stuck out to me in this interview that he did recently, because if he's saying that, I know the noise is around like who the next manager could be, but I have this disagreement with Harry, who I do podcasts with all the time, an Arsenal fan, and he thinks the situations are different. Personally, I think they're exactly the same.
What does he say? Tell us on the show. Harry's our producer here as well. So
Harry says that even from the early days, he could see a style of play with Mikel Arteta's Arsenal.
Okay. I don't know. I think we know with Harry, this is how our individuals view stuff, isn't it? Is that individually, I think there was a wave of Arsenal fans that were with that, was that Arteta's been brought in to be like Pep Mark II. Yeah, style of plays there. We know how he wants to play. And I agree with that. I think maybe in the early, he won the FA Cup year one, didn't he, Arteta? And I think there was immediately a kind of upturn of Arsenal playing a style of football that wasn't Arsene Wenger's style of football. Like, it's similar, but not the same. So I think that was there. But I think we could even say, Scott, rewind a year, but we felt that about Ten Hag after year one. So after year one, we're
absolutely
going.
Absolutely. That's my counter argument.
Yeah, this isn't Ole ball anymore. This isn't just transition. They're trying to do this. He's playing a 4-1-5. He's trying to press these areas. All of this, great. Okay. And yet he fell off the proverbial wagon this year. There's no doubt about it. I mean, when you look at Arteta, that is exactly where the similarities are. Because Arsenal in year two were not particularly good. They're even worse in year three. And it took at Arsenal for the change in their ownership to kind of change their direction, because it wasn't the actual people that changed, but obviously it was the restructuring upstairs. And that they said to Arteta, we finally agree with you that the football club isn't about the kind of Aubameyang stroke, Lacazette stroke, Ozil stroke, all those other players that it had, where the club was going. And do you know what, Scott? That is the most Man United thing ever. That's exactly what we have gone through, is that we've gone through all these names for years and years and years. And the truth is, it isn't about names. It's about how you make your project and build it. And that's why Arsenal are where they are now. Because Arsenal went, all right, we'll stick with Arteta, because we could sack him and go and get Nagelsmann or someone like that tomorrow and just do it. But does it benefit us? Is there a net benefit? And I think the truth is that by sticking by Arteta, they gave him the opportunity to succeed rather than just saying, you failed. Yeah, you failed 2 years ago, so we've got rid of you. And I think for Eric, I mean, that is what he is now on the path to either proving or not, is that he's got a dozen or so games left to at least show Ineos that the dressing room and what he's constructed in the last year has value. And this is, I think, where Jim Ratcliffe is going to be ruthless, one or the other. He's either going to say, no, I know someone else who can do it better, and that's what I'll do. But that comment there on the podcast, Scott, as you said there, absolutely leans towards that he will stick with Ten Hag. And we know that Ineos will kind of put out there that there isn't a big craving to replace the manager. They've got so many other things they want to do. Like, they've got a lot of things they want to do. But at the top of the list is not replace the manager, though they might still do that if United crumble and fail now in the next few weeks.
Cost money as well. That will.
Cost a ton of money.
United's position financially is not perfect at the moment, to say the least.
Yeah.
But even Arsenal, and through under Arteta's guidance, they played. I know they played out the back, sure, but they played a back three for a while. They had contracts that they ate. They gave Aubameyang $350,000 a week under Arteta. And then realised that was a mistake and cancelled it.
Literally 10 minutes after he signed it. They signed it the next week. He was terrible. And it was like, oh. And it's happened at Man United a few times, that, hasn't it?
But that proved there that Arsenal put culture and the interest of success over high earners and big wages and big personalities. And Aubameyang was obviously... there's a good argument to say that his personality was rubbing off the wrong way on young players, and they had to get that person out the door in order to take a step forward, but they had to eat a big financial penalty in order to do so. They did the same with, you know, there's other players that they've had to get rid of and pay off, and they did that, and they spent money where they necessarily didn't have to in order to move forward, you know. But you could argue that they did have to. And there's tons of players that we talk about, all the wage bill on this podcast. We talk about it all the time. We talk about personalities. We talk about like people earning too much money. We talk about incentivization and all of this. And like United haven't made those calls, really. They've made a few. They've had the big Ronaldo fallout. They've had the Greenwood thing. They've had the Sancho thing. But this, it's better than it was, but there's still things hanging over them. The Greenwood thing is still there. Like they've got to address that. And you'd think, or you'd hope, that Ineos would look at this summer coming forward and think, right, we have to end these sagas now to move forward clearly.
Yeah.
And the wages, which while they are coming down, need to be corrected. high earners like Casemiro, that was a mistake, long-term mistake. Everyone knows that.
Yeah.
As much as he had a good first season, Rafa Varane, you know, big earners, but really you need young players. You need young energy. You need good energy. And as much as people like Rafa Varane, I think he'll leave. But it's necessary, all of this.
Yeah, and a lot of this is about just being able to look in the mirror, Scott, and be honest. That's all it is. Is that you can like certain things and like certain players or even like prefer certain styles of play and all that. A lot of these questions all just come down of just looking bang in the mirror and saying, that's right and that's wrong. So we have to go with the right side of it, even if it hurts. Do you know what I mean? If this is, doesn't feel great today, is that's the right way to do it. And that's exactly what Arsenal did, I think, with their play and with their squad. And they looked at their young talent, the Martinellis, the Sakas, you know, Saliba was out on loan. And they've built all the way through the core. Like when they went and got Odegaard, like I think no one could have thought with that pickup from Real Madrid that he could have a transformative effect on their midfield. But they just all, everyone thought he was a good player. Do you know what I mean? You go pick up these players and can you push them to another level? That's a huge thing, I think, when you're looking at kind of like squad building and stuff like that. It's that you don't always have to go to the top layer to go and get the player. You've got to kind of look down the chain and find that. And I think that's where Ineos will absolutely go. And that's why you go with the likes of Berardi, you go with Dan Ashworth, because that's their experience. Yeah, that's what they do well. And Man United were just like Arsenal in the Aubameyang years, giving massive contracts out and then saying to people, why are we not winning the league? Cristiano, you're on £500,000 a week. Oh, you can't run. Oh, right. Okay. Oh, dear. What do we do now? You know, so that's happened so many times at United. It happened at Arsenal as well. So I think the way Ratcliffe said that in terms of giving them time and being patient, I think they'd want to do that as well. I think they'd want to kind of fix all the other bits and say, right, now, Erik ten Hag, this is your chance.
Of course, related to culture and contracts and spending, there's another section, which is the final section that we'll talk about from this. You talk about Jude Bellingham and Kylian Mbappe, and obviously we're in an era where big names are everything and big money signings are the most important thing, even more important than trophies. You got to win the transfer window rather than the Premier League.
Yeah.
You know, that's just the way it is.
Most Man United fan.
Yeah. Talk about, he's asked about Jude Bellingham and Kylian Mbappe, who both will be playing for Real Madrid next season. Bellingham is a great footballer, but it's not where our focus is, he said. The solution isn't spending a lot of money on a couple of great players. Yeah. They've done that if you look at the past 10 years, as in Man United. The first thing we need to do is get the right people in the right boxes, managing and organising. We must make sure we get the recruitment right. Such a vital part of running a football club is getting that right, finding new players. I'd rather find the next Mbappe rather than spend a fortune to buy success. Music. This is music. It's not that clever, is it, buying Mbappe? In a way, anyone could figure that one out. But what's much more challenging is to find the next Mbappe or the next Bellingham or the next Roy Keane. And I think this one, from what I have seen, didn't go down too well with some people. But I'm sorry, but that's exactly right. Then you've got to move away from ridiculous spending on players that, and you lump all of your expectation on one big name. It doesn't work, man. It doesn't work.
It doesn't work. Like, I think if we bought Kylian Mbappe tomorrow and he was flown to Manchester and we put him in our team, do you know what, Scott? We're still not winning the league. We're not. Kylian Mbappe might score a billion goals, but you're still losing because you haven't fixed all the other bits. Do you get what I mean? So I like the way he phrased that in that it's not that clever, is it? Because it's true, because that's the kind of football manager mentality, isn't it? I'm talking about the game football manager, you know, championship manager from years gone by, is that people will look at it and they think it is just buy this big player, throw him in the team and then everything is fixed. And yet Man United had a perfect story there. You mentioned Arsenal a minute ago. You can have big players. It's not about that. It's actually about your bottom feeders. It's the depth of your squad. It's your young players. It's who you're bringing through. It's who has the responsibility week after week. And then you create your stars. You build your stars. Again, not an Arsenal podcast, but let's use the example. You know, the debate in this last week has been, is Saka world class? That's like a debate that's been going on the last week. Well, to me, the answer to that is yes. Why? Look at the numbers. The numbers dictate everything. It doesn't matter what you think. In the Premier League, you have to return a certain amount of numbers to be able to do a certain amount of things. And United's players, all our big players, Scott, have sometimes returned big numbers and then other times haven't. So I think Ineos will look at that through very clear eyes and go, right, okay, we need to do this differently from the bottom up. And I think that gives Erik ten Hag a chance, Scott, because I think he's that more, I think he's more comfortable in that environment, maybe, where you slow build and you do it that way, than maybe coming to Man United and having to be a bit of a shock jock and just solve problems. And we've had so many problems in the time that he's been there, from Ronaldo onwards. Mason Greenwood is a problem, but we do know that the club are trying to negotiate a way to get rid of him at the football club. We know that they would want to negotiate a sale with football clubs, and that's been a thing in the last few weeks. So that hopefully will get solved quite quickly. But I think for Erik, it is like next 12 games, Scott, it's just about becoming bomb-proof if you can. Just at least show your team's doing something. The Liverpool result, you see, that's why that was so important to his future. Just to be able to do that and have that moment, there's a lot of value in that, I think, when he sat down with the board and saying, this is what I want it to be like. I want to beat Liverpool every week. I want to be better than them. And this is how I want to do it.
Of course, there's tactical problems that you see still on the pitch. And but like I've said on previous shows, you can't sit there, honestly, sit me down and look me in the eye and tell me Erik ten Hag intends to play his defence that deep and intends to put his line that high.
He addressed it. He came out and went, "That's rubbish, that." He said it before.
Yes, he said, "I either want the lowest line or the highest line." That's what he said, right?
We can't keep doing this. He's actually saying it out loud. He's going, we can't keep doing this. Like, it is bad. It's bad football. So I think that's the thing. But with the connection between his ideology and what the players actually can and can't do. So he's said it out loud. And that's what I appreciate, that, because it's not like he's saying, like, maybe Jose would, where Jose would be like, these are my tactics. You just got to deal with it. And I've always said, Jose's fine until you start losing, because when it's you're losing and bad, you know there's no solution after it. He's just going to still do Jose stuff, isn't he? So I think that's a debate with Erik, and maybe United fans are thinking that about, is he good enough? That is a valid question. But he has said it, at least. You know, he has said it out loud and gone, no, I don't agree with that. I don't want this big chasm in my midfield because of X, Y, and Z.
And like I said this on previous pods as well, like, you need better centre. You need centre-backs that are front foot. You need a left back that's fit, you know? You need midfielders that can pass the ball. And he's playing Scott McTominay because Scott McTominay didn't want to leave last year. That's why he has to play him, or he has to find players who can score goals like McTominay's doing. And McTominay's goal, he uses the word sniff a lot, sniffing goals and sniffing opportunities, doesn't he? Give Ten Hag credit for that. I know Scott McTominay deserves credit for it, but what you're seeing is there, Ten Hag adjusting his ideals to get McTominay in those positions.
Yeah. You know? And you can compare up maybe Ole's use of McTominay in double pivot, playing you kind of very, very deep in the sixes. And we always say, well, he's not very good there, or he fills a hole there, but he's not actually doing you any good on the ball from deeper areas. And I think when you look at Erik Ten Hag, is that McTominay, we know, always had these like striker sensibilities in his game, but no one's ever exploited them, have they? And I think that's why this year there is some credit in the bank for Scott McTominay. Now, is he still a problem in midfield? Like you just said there, the chasm there. Yes, 100%. And it was there against Liverpool, and it's been there in every game I've ever watched. Is that if you want to play on the deck, you've got Kobbie Manu, and you haven't really got anything else. You can put Eriksen in there, but then there's a problem, obviously, with where he travels and where he picks the ball up. But I think these are kind of ongoing problems. I don't think they're things that the manager can kind of just work out on the fly. You have to be strategic about it, Scott. And this is why now Mason Mount's used in midfield, how he uses him now in the next few weeks. Mason Mount was bought because he's brilliant in the press, brilliant off ball, but Mason Mount's going to have to add value on the ball. And before he got injured, he wasn't. Like, his on-ball numbers were terrible. He'd only been at the club a few weeks. So, like, here he is now. There's an opportunity there, isn't there, that midfield to build something and then take it into next year and to go into the transfer market and maybe go and buy that midfielder that you need. But no, it doesn't need to be Jude Bellingham at 120 million, does it, or above? There's loads of good midfielders, Scott, that are actually quite good on the football. Like, they do exist. They're out there. Man United need to add maybe one or two of them.
Yeah, so Sir Jim's done some words there. We're just reflecting on what he's done so far. But get in the comments and let us know what you think, and if you're happy with what you've seen of or heard from Jim. Obviously, in terms of like differences that they can make to the football club, they haven't done anything yet because there hasn't been any time to do anything yet. But Well, maybe they have done stuff. You know, the speed with which they've addressed the problem that is the stadium, that they wasted no time with that. Maybe they could do a bit more to shut down speculation over the manager. I don't think it's very helpful, though. Julian Nagelsmann has said that he'd be happy to sort his future out before Euro 2024. And I know he's in the frame for United as well. So maybe he is the person that could be it. But he's been linked with Liverpool too.
Yeah. I think being fair to Ineos as well, I don't know how they can shut that conversation down. Simply the fact that Man United have been losing games over a period of time, like you've highlighted there. It's only been two since the turn of the year. But 16 or 17 in the season is unacceptable. Is that conversation will carry on, like somewhere in the background. It's more important that Ineos can say to Erik ten Hag, right, these are the expectations. You need to hit this level for us to kind of carry on doing it. And I don't think that's wrong. I think that's okay, really. But I'd like to hear from our audience, Scott, what they think about Ratcliffe in these first few weeks and months of him being kind of actively involved in United. Are you happy with it, or are you on the other side of the fence? Would you still prefer United to have been, you know, run by a state or Qatar or something like that? Because that conversation is still there quietly in the background. It's quietened down a little bit, but there's still plenty of content creators out there, I think, stoking fires and doing that and saying, oh, you know, Ineos out, Jim Ratcliffe out. I'm quite happy with what I've seen so far, but I'm also not deluded, Scott. Like, it could go wrong still. Like, we don't know. I don't know if I trust Jim Ratcliffe yet. I want to, but I like what he's saying, and I like what Ineos are trying to do by putting a structure in place. What to do with Erik ten Hag, I'm less bothered about, and say maybe yourself or something like that. I think that the manager is not the answer today. The manager might be the answer in the future. But that's a classic one, isn't it? That clubs, when they don't like something and don't like results, what do? They sack a manager. I think there's a lot of credit in the bank for Erik, is that if he can get through to the end of the season, I don't see them just getting rid of him. I don't think, unless someone like Nagelsmann comes up and you go, actually, Nagelsmann's our coach for the next 10 years. And that's the way we look at it. And we don't see Erik ten Hag like that. So I don't know. I do like Nagelsmann.
I'm not going to open the can of worms.
That could go on, right? That could be another show.
No, I will. 2 years ago, everyone would have wanted Erik ten Hag. Julian Nagelsmann just got sacked by Bayern.
I did. Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And it's just how times can change. It's a little bit funny. Like, you look at the circumstances around the manager. And
I don't think Nagelsmann wasn't available, though, was he, then? Because he'd gone to Bayern Munich. Is that right? If I can remember that.
And he got sacked.
So he got Thomas sacked because, you know, and so did Thomas Tuchel. Like, you know, so it's one of these things. Yeah,
they're both more shiny and better than Erik ten Hag.
Look, Pochettino now, suddenly not as shiny anymore. Do you know what I mean? Pochettino linked with a Man United job like three or four times. So that, I think you're right. And I think that's the way to kind of be salient about Erik ten Hag and about time, and do you give a manager time, is that the next shiny toy is not always the right one. It just isn't. And it's, you have to look at a number of factors and decide where you're going. I still really do rate Nagelsmann. So I know it's a different show.
I do too.
You know, and I look at him and maybe they look at him as maybe like their Klopp answer. Like, I only make that Bundesliga comparison, is that Liverpool looked at Klopp and went, right, this is a manager we want to stick with because we've done the Brendan Rodgers route and we've done this route. They did the Roy Hodgson route for a little bit, didn't they? And they kind of, you end up somewhere else. And I think, as you said, we all wanted Erik ten Hag last year, and he was the best on the market, I felt, like, in terms of what you could have got in that moment. But times change. At the end of this year, there might be one or two coaches out there that maybe the Ineos gravitate towards. One of them might be the current England manager. That will be an interesting conversation for another day.
Oh, God.
It's coming. when I say it's coming, I mean we know they like him.
I tell you what, though, if you're listening and you're a person in support of that, I'd be really interested to hear from you. Because I don't think I've seen one person in favour of that. But yeah, anyway, that's it for us. I think we'll wrap it up there. United play Brentford on Saturday, and we'll be back a couple of days after that. I'm taking some time away, so I will try and catch that game if I can. I hope I will be able to. But yeah, we'll be back because United will play Brentford, and hopefully they can win that. They then play Chelsea after that before Liverpool come back to Old Trafford, which is going to be an interesting one. But
They're all kind of must wins. They're all kind of must wins for Eric, like, or must perform kind of things, isn't it? Must show something.
Yeah, the last time United went to Brentford, they lost 4-0.
No, I remember that.
And that was.
Do you remember the show we did after that? Do you remember the show we did after that? We were like, we've gone from being right, really high, quite low. Like, oh my God, what have we just seen? So, fingers crossed, it's not the same story, but, you know. I hope Eric
Brentford just lost to Burnley. Come on, you should be beating them. Burnley.
Yeah, exactly. But you should be beating. That's been the story again of the season. These teams that we've lost games to and stuff like that, you kind of look at it and you go, we should be doing better than that. These teams are not as good as you on paper and you need to push that. So let's see where they go. Because I think United got a lot of winnable games, but there's also some banana skins in there. And you can push your way maybe towards an FA Cup final, Scott. Like, don't want to kind of tempt fate there, but you've got a good draw at Wembley and you could end the season. Your last game of the season might well be the FA Cup final, Scott. So between then and then, make sure that you're putting the performances together and keeping your manager in a job.
This has been the Promised Land podcast. We'll be back, as I said, next week. Now, only one show for you this week because I'm away. But subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Watch us on YouTube, the Promised Land and Man United podcast, and subscribe on audio platforms, Apple and Spotify as well. Like the video, subscribe. Leave a comment for us on anything we talked about today. Hit the notification bell so you never miss a show on both the audio platforms and on YouTube. And leave us a 5-star review and a comment on audio too. Follow us on social media as well at @_ScottSaunders, @_Rob_B and @TPLMUFC. And until next time, everyone, thanks to Rob and from myself. Have a fantastic week. And we'll see you soon for another episode of the Promised Land podcast.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.